Robinhood Radio presents Your Health with osteopathic physician Dr. Kim Tripp, a show presented monthly on Robinhood Radio, discussing the challenges faced and the solutions that are available for keeping vital health and well-being throughout our lives. And now, here's Dr. Tripp.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Your Health with Dr. Kim Tripp, osteopathic physician. This is the health show created to bring you vital information and discussion about all sorts of health issues on your mind and in your life from the unique perspective of traditional osteopathic medicine. So first, as we always do, let's clarify what osteopathic medicine means. Osteopathic medicine is practiced by fully licensed physicians in the United States with a DO degree, a Doctor of Osteopathic Medicine degree. Our practice is based on the essential relationship in all living things between their structure and their function. In other words, the natural interdependence between anatomy and physiology, or between the physics of the body and its chemistry. As osteopathic physicians, we use our comprehensive and precisely detailed knowledge of anatomy and physiology to promote health and healing in our patients. We work gently with our hands to help your body restore optimal function based on optimal structure. Our medical specialty is therefore called osteopathic manual medicine. We receive uniquely in-depth training in anatomy and physiology and their relationship within your body in the context of a full physician's medical training. Only U.S.-trained osteopaths are fully licensed physicians and have all of the current medical pharmacopoeia, nutritional science, and full medical training at our disposal. This means that your individual treatment may include a wide range of approaches, but it will always be founded on our gentle hands-on work. We practice from the unique perspective of first looking for the health in our patients rather than merely finding illness and disease. Our practice has been especially effective for, but isn't limited to, musculoskeletal and other structural issues, as well as chronic headache, gastrointestinal problems, post-concussion syndrome, sleep disturbance, allergies, and many other health problems. We work together with you, the patient, to help you build health and vitality in your body, mind, and spirit as the solution for health problems, rather than only treating the disease symptoms. So in the radio show, we tackle health issues from that point of view. What can we do to help you build your health and vitality in order to prevent and heal injuries and disease? And we do that by giving you some basic information about the problem to help you understand what's happening, as well as offer solutions and guidance for helping yourself to heal and stay healthy based on our clinical experience with patients in our practice. And before we get started on today's topic, let me just remind you that you can listen to all of the prior Your Health shows online at your convenience, such as the back pain, nutrition, carpal tunnel, concussion, or allergy shows, by going to the Goldman Tripp website at www.goldmantripp.net, click on the radio show panel and then the individual show, or you can get the podcasts by going to Robinhood Radio's website, then the on-demand section, then you can scroll down and select the Your Health shows and find the individual show by topic. It's very convenient. So, it's summertime once again, and the living is supposed to be easy, at least in the world of musical theater. But out here, where all the world's a stage, there are numerous health challenges that go with summer. So we're going to address some of these in the next couple of shows so that we can enjoy our summers to the fullest. And today, we're going to start with the big one. Hold on to your hats because there's a lot of information coming. So remember, you can get back to the show on the web. Today, we're going to tackle tick-borne diseases. There are several tick-borne diseases that occur in our area. It's important to know enough about all of them to realize when you need to be tested and/or treated for these diseases, as well as to have some background knowledge of the different ticks involved and what symptoms might occur that indicate these different possible diseases. We'll talk about all these issues today, as well as how to prevent tick bites, And no, the answer to tick-borne disease prevention is not to just stay inside all summer. Heaven forbid. So we'll start with the most commonly occurring tick-borne illness, Lyme disease. Most of us around here are aware of Lyme disease. Lyme disease is caused by the spirochete bacteria, formerly called Borrelia burgdorferi. Lyme disease is transferred from this tick, which is the blacklegged tick, and it's transferred from an infected blacklegged tick to ourselves when the tick bites us. The blacklegged tick is also called the deer tick, and its formal name is Ixodes scapularis. Not all black-legged ticks carry Lyme disease, and not all bites from infected ticks transmit the disease. However, the only way to determine if a tick that bites you is infected with Lyme or other diseases is to save the tick and have it tested, which is not often an option. Lyme disease, by the way, is named for Lyme, Connecticut. The first signs of the disease in Connecticut showed up in 1975 when a cluster of children and adults in the Lyme, Connecticut area complained of unusual arthritis-type symptoms. 2 years later, in 1977, the first cases of so-called Lyme arthritis were identified, and the black-legged tick was implicated in the transmission of the disease. Eventually, in 1982, the disease-causing Borrelia burgdorferi bacterium was discovered, and the first brochure addressing Lyme disease was developed by the Arthritis Foundation. Ever since then, there's been a great deal of controversy in the medical community about the diagnosis, treatment, and prevention of Lyme disease. The symptoms of the disease can be so variable between individuals that it can all seem a little crazy. The blood tests for Lyme, especially the basic screening test, as opposed to the Western blot, more on that later, can often give equivocal or even downright erroneous results. So how the heck can we even know that we have Lyme disease, let alone treat it correctly? Well, let's start with the symptoms. In general, Lyme disease can lead to fatigue, headaches, depression, anorexia, and the signature migratory arthritic-type joint pains. Migratory meaning the joint pain can move inexplicably from one joint to another. This can have swelling or not, and sometimes you can have a fever, but not always. You may or may not get a kind of skin rash from the tick bite that spreads out like the widening circles in a pond from a thrown pebble, the so-called erythema migrans rash, which means spreading redness. Well, that's enlightening. You might or might not get an itch or a sore or a raised red area around the tick bite itself, just as you might with any insect bite. Sometimes the tiny nymph stage of the blackleg tick will actually bury itself in the skin, creating a longer-term irritation at the bite site, and more on the tick life cycle later. If this sounds all kind of vague and nonspecific, that's because it is. If you experience these symptoms, whether or not you are aware of being bitten by a tick, be seen right away by a physician. Most likely you will then be sent for tick-borne illness blood testing and treated with a 3 to 4 week course of antibiotics, generally doxycycline, but this can vary depending on your individual medical history. Your symptoms may actually worsen for a while during treatment because of the infamous Jarisch-Herxheimer reaction. This is a reaction to bacterial toxins released by the die-off of the Lyme bugs within your tissues during treatment with antibiotics, which results in a systemic inflammatory response and worsened symptoms. We are often bitten by ticks without knowing we were bitten until the little beasties have been attached or embedded for a while, or even bitten us, had a lovely gourmet experience, and then fallen off, all without our knowledge. This is why it's so important to have any unusual symptoms evaluated by a physician. The diagnosis of Lyme is really a clinical diagnosis based on symptoms and supported by blood work, not the other way around. There are two widely used blood tests for Lyme, the basic screening test, which is less reliable than the other one, the Western blot. The Western blot identifies specific antibodies found in your blood to Borrelia burgdorferi. There are two types of antibodies identified. The IgM antibodies, which generally indicate an acute and active infection, and the IgG antibodies, which indicate that you've had exposure in the past and also may be actively fighting the disease and creating a new library of Lyme antibodies, depending on the number of IgG antibodies found. The criteria for deciding if a Lyme Western blot is positive or not, in other words, whether or not you have Lyme, is based on the number and type of these two sorts of antibodies found. And it's not an absolutely black and white situation, so it's open to interpretation. So again, test results should be considered in the context of your clinical symptoms and medical history and need to be interpreted by your physician. There is also the very thorny question of post-treatment Lyme disease syndrome, in other words, chronic Lyme disease. Some people seem to have difficulty clearing Lyme disease symptoms after the usual antibiotic treatment regimens. They can suffer for months to years. There is enormous controversy in the medical world over whether or not these poor folks remain infected with resistant Borrelia organisms or are suffering from a post-infection secondary condition, analogous to a post-viral arthritis, due to damage to the involved tissues, long-term inflammatory responses, and/or a miscued immune system. It's hard to know, and each individual could be dealing with one, several, or all of these scenarios, all of which will need individualized assessment and treatment by a physician who's well-versed in dealing with Lyme in all its forms. And with all of this, it's crucial to realize that Lyme is not the only tick-borne disease to be aware of, and the black-legged tick is not the only tick species to know about. Our black-legged Lyme tick can also carry diseases called anaplasmosis, babesiosis, and Powassan virus. Another tick-borne disease, Ehrlichiosis, is chiefly carried by the Lone Star tick, Amblyomma americanum. This is a tick species that has made its way north in recent years and is also responsible for the alpha-gal-related red meat allergy. We're going to talk about that some more later, too. Anaplasmosis and Ehrlichiosis symptoms can be very dramatic, flu-like, and include a high fever, headache, chills and sweating, fatigue, muscle pain, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, confusion, and even delirium. Powassan virus also has similar symptoms, and it can be expressed as a mild or a severe version of that disease. Since it's a virus, Powassan treatment is supportive. There's no pharmaceutical treatment. Anaplasmosis, which was formerly known confusingly as human granulocytic ehrlichiosis, or HGE, is caused by a bacterium called Anaplasma phagocytophila. These bacteria infect white blood cells and can cause symptoms from mild to life-threatening. Ehrlichiosis can be caused by at least three different species of Ehrlichia bacteria carried by the ticks. Babesiosis is not caused by bacteria, but is caused by infection with any one of many species of the genus Babesia, which is a microparasite that infects red blood cells. Many people who are infected with Babesia don't even have any symptoms. Some people develop general flu-like symptoms such as fever, chills, sweats, headache, body aches, loss of appetite, nausea, or fatigue. That all sound familiar? Babesia parasites infect and destroy red blood cells, so babesiosis can cause a special type of anemia called hemolytic anemia. This anemia can cause jaundice, yellowing of the skin, and dark urine. Babesia symptoms can range from none to life-threatening, especially in people who don't have a spleen, have a weak immune system for other reasons, such as cancer, lymphoma, or AIDS patients, have other serious health conditions like liver or kidney disease, or are very elderly. There are specific blood tests to identify all of these for proper treatment with antibiotics, or in the case of babesiosis, antibiotics plus antiparasitical drugs. So let me emphasize again the importance of seeking care if you suspect any tick-borne illness. A more unusual tick-borne disease in our area is Rocky Mountain spotted fever, carried by the large dog tick, Dermacentor variabilis. Rocky Mountain spotted fever is one of several diseases caused by the spotted fever group of Rickettsia bacteria. Signs and symptoms can include the usual tick-borne illness array of fever, headache, nausea, vomiting, stomach pain, muscle pain, lack of appetite, and rash. Rash is very common in people who have Rocky Mountain spotted fever. A spreading rash usually develops 2 to 4 days after fever begins. The look of the rash can vary quite widely over the course of the illness. Some rashes can look like big red splotches, and some look like tiny little dots. While almost all patients with Rocky Mountain spotted fever will develop a rash, it often doesn't appear early in the illness, which can make Rocky Mountain spotted fever difficult to diagnose. Rocky Mountain spotted fever affects the blood vessels and can cause permanent damage leading to life-threatening conditions and, in severe cases, even the need for amputation of a limb. It's treated with antibiotics, again generally doxycycline. These are not the only tick-borne diseases possible in the United States, but they are the most common in our area and are carried by our regional resident ticks. There are 3 commonly found ticks in our area, and also they are not the only ticks in the universe, but they are the most relevant to our region. They are 1, the black-legged or deer tick that carries Lyme, anaplasmosis, babesiosis, and Powassan virus. 2, the larger dog tick that carries Rocky Mountain spotted fever. And 3, the Lone Star tick that carries ehrlichiosis and causes the alpha-gal red meat allergy. The alpha-gal-induced red meat allergy is a relatively new phenomenon in our area, as is the common occurrence of the Lone Star tick itself. The Lone Star tick is so named because the female has a visible white dot on her back, which is absent in the male. The Lone Star tick bite can cause a transfer of a specific carbohydrate called galactose, alpha-1,3-galactose, in other words, alpha-gal for short. This carbohydrate is found naturally in all mammals with the exception of old world monkeys and apes and humans. It is present in the mammalian meat we normally eat and digest. Commonly eaten mammalian meats include beef, pork, lamb, mutton, venison, i.e. deer, buffalo, and goat. However, in this unique situation, the Lone Star tick bites another mammal, picks up the alpha-gal from their flesh, then bites us, and leaves some alpha-gal under our skin in the process. Because the alpha-gal is an alien carbohydrate to us, remember, humans and old world monkeys and apes don't have this. Having it under our skin and exposed to our immune system can sensitize our immune system to the carbohydrate in a new way. If we then eat mammalian meat containing the alpha-gal, we can get a severe allergic reaction to it as our immune system, now sensitized to an otherwise benign carbohydrate, mounts an immune attack against the alpha-gal that it sensitized to as an alien compound when it got injected into our skin by the tick. This reaction can lead to severe anaphylactic symptoms in some people that require immediate emergency medical attention. The allergy can last for years, and anyone with these symptoms must avoid eating any meat from any mammals, including exotic mammals like giraffe, water buffalo, lion, or zebra, until blood tests show no alpha-gal antibodies present. And even then, a first bite of mammalian meat should only be taken when you are very nearby emergency medical facilities in case the reaction is mounted again. Poultry, eggs, and fish are safe to eat with this allergy, as the alpha-gal carbohydrate is not present in their tissues. This one's a big challenge. All these ticks have multi-stage life cycles that start with eggs laid by the female adult ticks. Most ticks go through four life stages: the egg, which hatches into a six-legged larva, which then develops into an eight-legged nymph, and then finally matures into the adult. After hatching from the eggs, ticks need to eat blood at every stage to survive. Ticks can take up to 3 years to complete their full life cycle, and most will die because they don't find a host for their next feeding at each successive stage. The larvae and nymphs are very small and difficult to see, so prevention of tick bites is the best way to avoid tick-borne illness. However, if you do find a tick that has attached itself to you, remove it safely with a tick remover. That will ensure that the head is also removed, and these little things are now widely available. Save the tick if you wish to submit it for testing, or crush it before discarding it, and call your physician to discuss having an exam and blood work as appropriate. Which brings me to resources and prevention. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control, in other words, the CDC, and the International Lyme and Associated Diseases, ILADS, websites are great sources for current information and contacts regarding Lyme and other tick-borne diseases, including all the newest developments. The CDC has really upped the depth and timeliness of all of its info on their website, and ILADS has been dedicated to dealing with Lyme and tick-borne illnesses in a very comprehensive and practical way for years. So both sites have a wealth of accurate and helpful resources and information. And now on to prevention, which is the final word in dealing with ticks. Firstly, it's impossible to live in our area and never encounter a tick. So just realize that you will have tick encounters of the first kind and will likely be just fine if you are an otherwise healthy and attentive person who sticks to good preventive habits. But make sure to follow these precautions. Routinely use insect repellents on your shoes, hats, and clothes. There are numerous effective botanical and other alternatives to DEET available. These generally need repeat applications to work well, so carry them with you outdoors. Always give yourself and your pets a thorough check over when coming in from outdoors. Make sure to check in those hard to inspect places like armpits, groins, hair and scalp, and the backs of your knees. A strong hot shower with a good full body and scalp scrub can often dislodge any newly acquired adult ticks that are wandering around on you. It's also important to keep healthy and vital in every way. Our immune system is the front line for dealing with any illness, including tick-borne illnesses. And by maintaining our health and wellness in an optimal state, we give ourselves the best chance of fighting off any tick-borne illness we may be exposed to, including in situations where we do need help from antibiotics or other drugs. So staying healthy is key, which brings me back to osteopathy and the close of today's show here with a reminder that a good osteopathic physician who is a specialist in osteopathic manual medicine can be especially helpful for summer health issues of all kinds, improving our resilience and physiological function by working gently with our hands with the involved organs, nerves, vasculature, fascias, and associated tissues to release restrictions in those physical tissues of the immune system, diaphragm, joints, blood and lymphatic flow, as well as to help balance the autonomic nervous system function, all based on precise knowledge of anatomical detail, and to help clinically with nutritional issues and support for whatever treatments you may be going through. But now I've run out of time again. That was a vast amount of material today, so do remember that you can review all of this from the Your Health Show podcast available at Robin Hood Radio's website and from the Goldman Tripp website at www.goldmantripp.net. Thank you so much for your attention to Your Health with Dr. Kim Tripp. Remember, you can email your comments, suggestions, or questions to yourhealth@robinhoodradio.com. If you have a health issue yourself and would like to find out about how we might be able to help you in our practice of traditional osteopathy, we are at our offices in Sharon, Connecticut, Dr. Kim Tripp and Dr. Andrew Goldman, Goldman Tripp Osteopathic Healthcare, 860-364-5990, Monday to Friday, 8:45 a.m. to 5 p.m. with evening hours Wednesdays and Fridays, or on that website at www.goldmantripp.net. I'll be looking forward to being with you next time. Take care of yourself, enjoy your health, and thank you for listening.